Good afternoon. I've had a fantastic week. I hope all of you have. I'm sure you have. You notice all the beautiful weather I brought here today. And yeah. Well, of course, I was at the conference last week. It was very, very good for me. We had a few more in attendance this year than last year. I was trying to think of the number, but now I can't. It seemed like it was 280 or something. And so it was a very, very good conference. Of course, I didn't take my wife. You know, it's kind of a man's world out there. So, no, it wasn't, believe me. There was other single men. Not single at home, but single at the conference. And so I roommated with another elder that I think he's been in the ministry maybe all of his life, close to it. He's 85. He is 85 years old. So it was, that was a good experience. I mean, being in the ministry so many years and then being right there. We stayed up till past midnight. At night, just talking about the Bible and different subjects. So it was, I guess that was probably the highlight of the conference. No, I don't mean that. It was a highlight. And just being there and right there with the ministry and getting input, what's going on in the ministry and the work, I was very encouraged and inspired. You know, we are to be serving God. That's what we are. And these men, they are servants. The ones I were in contact with and able to speak with, they are servants. They really have put their heart into it. And the council right on down, I was very pleased with what I saw. So I'm speaking today, serving God with mammon. Serving God with mammon. If we might turn to Matthew chapter 6, and we see here, what do we see here? Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, when it comes to mammon. Do you remember that in verse 24, Matthew 6? Jesus said, "No one can serve two masters." And to serve there is talking about like to be a slave or a bondman, involuntarily or voluntarily. Yeah, we can voluntarily put ourselves into bondage into any number of things that might come up physically. To be in bondage or to be like a slave. So Jesus said, "No one can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." Mammon, I mean, that's not something that I grew up using the word mammon, you know. But as far as I can tell, according to Strong's, it can mean confidence, with our confidence, or wealth. In other words, we can't serve our own self. We can't serve wealth and put it before God. In other words, are we a bondman? Are we a slave to God? Are we a slave to increasing physical wealth and influence? You know, sometimes we think, why would someone run for president? Well, our president now, did he need the money? Think he needs the money? Probably not. But there's an influence, you know. That is part of mammon, is your influence. And that's something very attractive, not taking anything away from him, But I'm just saying that is an element there. Your influence, your wealth. You know, and God is saying, God is asking that you serve Him rather than mammon. Say, well, what are we going to eat? I need some mammon. You know, my wife said, I wish you'd give me some mammon. I'd like to have made or something, you know. But so we have to have some mammon. But if we look here at Matthew 6 a little bit, just in verse 4 there, it says that your charitable deeds be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will Himself reward you. How could you have charitable deeds if you weren't working or producing or acquiring some mammon? You don't even talking about prayer then. But when you pray in verse 6, did I say verse 6? I meant verse 4 before. In verse 6, but you, when you pray, go into your room. And when you shut the door, pray to your Father in secret. And God will see, He will reward you openly. For some think by long prayers and you know, projecting their influence, that that's going to impress God. No, it's not. And He says, therefore, in verse 8, do not be like them, for your Father knows the things you have need of before you even ask. And then He goes on, verse 12, He's talking about forgiveness. As we forgive others, God forgives. In verse 14, for if you forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will forgive you. So there's a item here. Who are we going to serve? We're going to serve our own, to empower our influence and to acquire wealth, or are we going to serve God as a bond slave, as a servant? And even about fasting, verse 17. And then 19, here we go. Do not lay up for yourselves treasure on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be. So Jesus is talking about you can't serve your own self, putting yourself before God, making a living before God, acquiring wealth. And as we progress, we'll see that God, that's fine to acquire wealth, and He expects it. But God is asking us to serve Him. Let's look at Matthew chapter 9, if you turn over a few pages there in Matthew chapter 9. And here's a man that was making some mammon. He had influence, and he had some wealth. As far as I've been able to find out about this, in Matthew 9:9, as Jesus passed on from there, He saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax office, and He said to him, "Follow me." So he rose and followed him. This man's called Levi in other places. So he saw a tax collector sitting at customs, a publican. He was a tax collector for the Romans. This was probably a pretty prestigious job. Jews, apparently some at least, were employed in this. They were tolerated by the Romans, and they were despised by the other Jews. So here's a man that had influence. He was making a good living. He was tolerated by his master, but his people probably despised him. Tax collectors were encouraged to exact fraudulent claims. Now, could he continue to do that? Matthew left his position to serve God. And what about us? How can our work, our everyday labor, that's for necessities, pleasure, be pleasing to God? You know, some jobs may be impossible to do and serve God. There may be some way of working it out. I felt like I had to change. I couldn't stay. I wasn't strong enough to face the pressure that was involved after I was called into the church to continue my job I was doing. It was just, I couldn't face it. I had to get out of it and start over. But I think most jobs, we can work them out, usually. We can work them out. But brethren, we can't serve or be enslaved to God and mammon. That is, they can't be equals. And that's kind of the point I came to. I mean, I can maybe compromise this and kind of keep them balanced. But I came to the point in realizing, no, they can't be equals. God has got to take the priority. And that's where my life's going to have to go. So, brethren, but we can serve God with our mammon, with our influence, with our wealth, we are able to serve God. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9. Proverbs 3, verse 9 says that we can actually honor God with what we have. We could actually honor God. And many times we think, well, you know, this filthy lucre, and it can be filthy lucre, but it also can be a blessing, not just to ourselves. And that's one of the keys, is our wealth and what we acquire is not just for ourselves. No. It says in Proverbs 3, verse 9, it says, honor the eternal with your possessions. Well, if you have possessions, you're probably not living in a monastery and just studying, praying, and meditating. You know, you wouldn't have any possessions, would you? But it says to honor God with your possessions. I'm sorry. I misquoted a scripture. No, so I'll try to get that right. Just bear with me here. Okay. It says to honor the eternal with your possessions. I mean, we're told to honor God with possessions, so we have possessions, hopefully, and with the first fruits of all your increase. The first things go to God. First thing, he's not taking it all. He's not demanding it all. He's just, again, you can't serve God and mammon on equal terms. He takes the first. First fruits, just a little first fruit, isn't it? Okay. Proverbs 3:9, honor God with your substance. Proverbs 11:25, just turn over to Proverbs 11:25. The generous soul will be made rich. It says the generous soul will be made rich. So maybe he wasn't rich, but he was generous. Remember Jesus said about the widow that cast in the money? When he saw other people casting in maybe large amounts. But he said she gave more because she gave of what she had. And that's what? It says the generous, in verse 25, the generous soul will be made rich. And he whose waters will also be watered. So that first step to go ahead and be generous. Now, I remember when we first came in the church, we learned about tithing. how in the world could we tithe? You know, how can, I thought, well, if I was making a lot more money, I could tithe. But that's not the way it is. Because when you make a whole lot of money, that really gets hard to tithe. You're making $1 million a year and you're going to give $100,000 away? And another $100,000 for the second tithe? That's tough. When you're making $3,500 a year, $350,000 for a year, well, maybe you think, well, that'd be harder because you're talking about doing without. But at least the numbers. But it's saying that generous, and then God will make you rich, either physically or spiritually, but God is going to intervene for a generous man. One of the points I wanted to make in this is God expects us to work. That might come to a shock to a lot of people, not in this room, but just in the nation. God expects us to work. Let's look at Exodus chapter 20, verse 9. Exodus 20, verse 9. You say, well, that's telling you to rest, not work. Exodus 20, verse 9. Okay, it starts out, let's go to verse 8. It's telling us to remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy, to set it apart. This is a special day. And then it goes on to explain. 6 days shall you labor. God says 6 days shall you labor. That word means to serve, like to till, to bring to pass, things that life require. Not necessarily employment, but you know, we have our job, and then we have all this other work that we need to, that we have to do. In this modern time in the city, you know, we should be mowing our lawn, keeping our car fixed, you know, cooking dinner for our wife, stuff like that that we labor at. And you know, we're not making a living there, but it's our labor. All the things we have to catch up. You know, the kids and the things that they need, whether it's homework or giving them experiences, taking them to things. That's our labor that we do. Maintaining life. There's a certain amount of labor that just goes in maintaining life. So he says, 6 days shall you labor. That's the 6 days we use for that. To serve, to till. And do all your work. Now here the work, the word be more like a deputyship. That is like a ministry. It's a general employment. It's an obligation. We've got a contract. We tell our boss, we're going, okay, we'll be there Monday or whatever day, and we're going to work these hours. And we're obligated to show up. And as I talk to employers now, that is a big headache. People just don't show up. Calling in, whatever reason. The car broke down. This happened, that happened. Whatever. Well, they just don't even call in. So, see, this is talking about the work, general employment. Things were obligated by contract. But God says we do that for 6 days. That's what we're supposed to do. Do what labor. But then he says, tells us to take a break. Take a break from these things that you have to do. Take a break. Stop our course of life, your employment, your enterprise. In other words, just rest from making a living. Take a break from it. But he tells us to labor and work. God expects us to work. And you say, well, some people can't work. Well, we'll talk about that too a little bit. But he's got two things right at the beginning. He says, keep it holy. That's an appointment to keep it clean and consecrate it, dedicate it that day. And the rest of the 6 days, work, do your labor. Let's look at 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. God expects us to work. 2 Thessalonians, you know, and I believe Apostle Paul is pretty plain on this. 2 Thessalonians 3:10. I'll just go ahead and start in verse 10. He says, for even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. That's pretty good motivation. If you don't work, you don't eat. And of course, there's disabled people that cannot work is worth thinking. Holding down a job, obligated to go. These days, these hours, or to do any number of physical things. You know, there that is. Jesus also said that he works. We'll talk a little more about the not being able to physically work a little bit later. But let's look now at John chapter 5. We see that Jesus said he works, and his Father works. He does have an emphasis on work. And I know work in some cases has been carried way to an extreme. Surveys I've seen of executives, big executives, you call them big financially and responsibility. Many of them work 14, 16 hours a day. Well, they kind of making their choice serving God or mammon. Of course, they're not called, but they work, but they're carrying it beyond what God says. John 5, verse 16. John 5, 16. For this reason, the Jews persecuted Jesus and sought to kill him because he had done things on the Sabbath. But Jesus answered them, my Father has been working until now, and I have been working. Well, they were throwing a little bit of persecution there. And again, the word work means work, toil, to be engaged. Jesus says he works. The Father works. He expects people to work. And, of course, they were off base. If we go back to verse 8, get a little background. The sick man, Jesus had asked, you know, he was laying there, he'd been sick. And Jesus is like, do you want to be made well? The sick man answered him, sir, I have no man to put me in the pool when the water is stirred up. But while I'm coming, another steps down. Well, Jesus demonstrated that to be healed, here's the way to be healed through Christ is the way I look at that. Jesus said to him, rise, take up your bed and walk. And immediately the man was made well, took up his bed and walked. And that day was the Sabbath. So then the Jews, they begin to complain about that he was breaking the Sabbath. But again, this man was sick. He had his bed. It wasn't like he did his moving every Sabbath. You know, he didn't move his bed to a new house every Sabbath. This was the deal. Take your bed and go home. So I guess probably if he left his bed there, somebody would take it or vandalize it or who knows. But he said, take up your bed. And of course, Jesus then said, he works and his Father works. So, brethren, if you don't produce, how can you share with others? And we see that God expects us to work. And then you could go on and say, well, if you don't produce, if you don't work, how can you share with others? We know that in Leviticus 19:18, I may turn there, Leviticus 19:18. Leviticus 19:18. Well, simply says, you shall not take... I don't think that's what I'm looking for. I don't know where I am. You shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Eternal. See, we're to love our neighbor. As we'll see, that involves sharing, helping, providing for, in certain cases, for others. That there are ways to produce even if you are being physically disabled. Yes, you still are commanded to work. But how could that be? Well, of course, we could always say prayer, encouragement, you could call, you could do letters. And to me, that's work. I'm not good at encouraging people or writing letters. You know, my wife's told me many times, Gerald, you don't live under stress, you cause stress. So, I mean, I try to avoid getting involved with people because I don't want to create more problems for them. But many people that aren't able to hold jobs, can they really labor at this? Let's look at Luke chapter 2. Luke chapter 2. We see here an example of a lady. And she is like Luke chapter 2 verse 36. I'm in Luke 8. Luke chapter 2, verse 36. Now there was one Anna, this is Luke chapter 2, verse 36, a prophetess. This was a woman speaking? I don't know just how. I think it'll tell us here in a minute. The daughter of Phanuel of the tribe of Asher. Here's a daughter from the tribe of Asher. She was of great age and had lived with a husband 7 years from her virginity. And this woman was a widow of about 84 years. Well, the man I was rooming with was 85. But it says, and this woman was a widow of about 84 years, who did not depart from the temple, but served God. How did she serve God? She's at least 85. With fastings and prayers, night and day. I know she had to sleep, she had to eat, but this is just saying that that was her job. Fasting and prayer. She was, I'm assuming she was too old to go out and go to a job or take care of children or work, fix for a husband. But what did she do? With fasting and prayers night and day. And in verse 38, and in coming in that instant, she gave thanks to the Lord and spoke of him to all those who looked for redemption. It says she spoke of him to all those who looked for redemption. She couldn't get up, maybe. I don't know if she could walk, or I assume she could, maybe. But she could fast and pray, and she could speak to all those who looked for redemption. She was spreading the word the best she could. That was her job. That was her work. She was spreading the word. And you know, we spread the word. Each one of us, we're not on the microphone preaching, doing television, but we support a work that is. And that widow, if she's here, and she probably is here in the Church of God, is praying for that and even fasting for it. And what kind of power do you think that might be having? What kind of influence? The prayers of a person that's not able to go out and make that manna, to share it, to give it to God, but she's doing it through prayers and fasting and speaking. Wherever she's at, she's speaking. She's giving support to those that are. She's giving the inspiration, maybe, but she's working. See, she spoke of him to all who look for redemption. Now you can take that however you want to, how she says she was a prophetess. So she was doing that Leviticus 19:18, love your neighbor as yourself. She was doing that in the way that she could do it. So if you don't produce, how could you share with other people? She could share in that way. She could speak of him, it says, and she could pray. She prayed fast because she couldn't work, apparently. She never left the temple, but she didn't shirk her responsibility from that commandment, that fourth commandment, 6 days shall you labor and do your work. So if we don't produce, how could we share? Let's look at Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah chapter 58, and we see sharing here, and that God expects that. That God expects us to use whatever we have, whatever God has blessed us with and given us opportunity to have. Isaiah 58, verse 6. Is not this the fast that I have chosen? To loose the bonds of the wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke. And then verse 7. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry? If you're not doing anything, where are you going to have any bread to share? If you don't have a job, or you're not doing anything, or to acquire anything, how are you going to share your bread? And that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out. Oh, you've got a house? You're not living in a monastery? No, you have a house. In other words, if you have a house, the Lady Anna apparently didn't have a house. I don't know for sure. She didn't leave the temple. That could mean something else. But here it says, you bring to your house the poor who are cast out or wandering. And, you know, you can apply that spiritually. How many people, you just think about it, are wandering out there? And, you know, we have a work where we're inviting these people into our house. And they may come right in the door any Sabbath. They're wandering through the internet or through the television, whatever. But are we willing to bring the cast out? And in continuing, it says, and when you see the naked, that you cover them. Or do you have something to cover them? Jesus warned the church that you don't know that you're naked. In other words, so it can apply spiritually. People that are naked, spiritually speaking. and hide not yourself from. And when you see the naked, that you cover them and not hide yourself from your own flesh. Oh, then your light shall break forth like the morning, and your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Eternal shall be your rear guard. And when the Israelites went through, God moved to the back as a rear guard for the Israelites, because Pharaoh was on their tail. They were on their tail. Reminds me, I woke up in the middle of the night. Now, you're supposed to sleep till morning, right? I don't always do that. I wake up in the middle of the night when people are supposed to be sleeping. So I said, I think I'll go for a walk. I take my dog. We go down the street. She runs off a little bit, and she starts yelping. She comes up out of there, and this coyote is just right on her tail, just biting. And that reminded me, you know, there's Pharaoh. He's right on their tail. He's going to be nipping and biting and taking them down. Well, but see, it says here that God will be your rear guard. He's going to be there at your rear guard. And in verse 10, if you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul. In other words, extend your soul to the hungry. You have to have something to give the hungry. And you're probably not going to acquire it by not doing something to produce it and satisfy the afflicted soul. So again, you can see the dual application here of spiritual and physical goes back and forth. And satisfy the afflicted soul. Then your light shall shine in darkness, and your darkness shall be as noonday. And even in verse 12, because, you know, this is prophetic, and it's dual. For those in verse 12, those from among you shall build the old waste places. God's own prophecy said, we will build the waste places. And again, you can talk physically or spiritually. And what a wasteland spiritually there is out there. It's a wasteland. And it's just wasteland. It's got to be built. There's really not a value out there. You shall raise up foundations of many generations, and you shall be called the repairer of the breach and the restorer of streets to dwell in. Repairer of the breach. I think Mr. Kubik has mentioned who's going to stand in the gap. You know, who's willing to stand in the gap and do something? You know, let's look at Matthew chapter 25. Matthew 25. If you would, please, Matthew 25. If you have it memorized, that's okay. You won't have to turn there. If I understand that in the Pharisees in the time of Christ, they would have the scriptures memorized. When Christ would say certain things, they knew that there was a scripture. They knew what he was saying to them. Okay, but we probably don't have it memorized. We've maybe lost that through the years. That ability, maybe. Matthew 25, verse 35. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. There it is. I was hungry, and you gave me food. Where'd we get the food? The manna just came down. We handed them some manna. Or did we do something to get it? I think we did something to get it. When I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. Of course, again, this is so dual. So it's spiritual and physically. The people out there are hungry, and maybe they don't realize it as yet. And they're thirsty. What did Jesus say? He was a fountain of living water. And the Pharisees rejected that. They rejected that living water. But Say, we are, and that's what we try to do. Through preaching the gospel, we try to give drink, spiritual drink, which is Christ. I was naked and you clothed me, and I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. All these things can be applied physically and spiritually. You know, so Jesus, he expects us to do something. You know, if we don't produce, how can we share with people? We all have a way of producing. We may have passed the age or the ability to hold a job, but we can produce. And maybe even more, something more important, probably, than what we could make in finances. You know, in James chapter 2, I will go ahead and turn there. I was going to just move on, but let's see. Maybe I should turn to James chapter 2 and verse 13. It says, James 2, 13, at the conference we talked about judgment, mercy, and faith. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy trumps or triumphs over judgment. So I guess if you're playing cards and you got the high card, someone else has a trump card. So you know who takes the spoil. It says here that wherever that was, mercy trumps or triumphs over judgment if you're carrying the trump card. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? You know, a brother, in verse 15, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warm and filled. I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to pray about that. See you later. You know, are you going to do something? Depart in peace, be warm and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body. What does it profit? Then he goes on, so faith by itself does not have works is dead. All the talking we can do, you know, what good does it do? We used to, on the job, we'd go up, pull up on the job, everybody'd stand around and look at it. Hey, guys, we can't look this thing in. We got to do something. You know, we can't look it in. And he's just saying we need to do something. And if we don't have the physical means to do it, we probably have a more powerful means, as Anna did, praying and even fasting at times for someone. You know, this, I don't know if I brought that or not. Yeah, I did. This TOW commentary, loving your neighbor as yourself. I just saw this and I thought it was interesting. I think I probably won't read it, but just to give you an idea. Be motivated through our work to serve others. Now, how can we do that? We're motivated. We know that God says to love your neighbor as yourself. So when you work, you're working for yourself and you're working for your neighbor. How can that be? We should be motivated through our work to serve others. To work as much to serve others as to meet our own needs. We don't give it all away. And our own kids do not have food. But when we work, we go there to serve ourselves and our others. Every work produces something for a value for people, unless you're a politician. No, I guess they do too. Our work produces something for customers, citizens, students, family. You think about it. Teachers, they go and they teach. They're preparing students to make a living, or to be able to live, to communicate, to learn to write, something they'll use the rest of their life, to know how to add, subtract. They're doing something. What about a hotel housekeeper? You can go on to the feast without one. See how it works out for you. You know? Your wife would be packing up and going home, probably. You know? After you tell her, you need to clean this place up and make the bed. But, a hotel housekeeper receives wages, right? But while at the same time providing the guest with a clean and a healthy room. I mean, do you appreciate that? Should be. I mean, every year when we go to the feast, we just always think about that. What about this person doing this? You know, is there any recognition, any prestige? No. There should be. Same as that teacher. You know, unless, of course, they're not doing their job, just like a teacher's not doing their job, of course. You know, they're missing the whole point of being there. But, I mean, we really appreciate it. We come in, and, man, everything's clean, nice, healthy. See? That work provides for that person working, and it provides for other people. Loving your neighbor as yourself. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9. Psalms, Proverbs 3, our work, and sometimes many people lose sight of this. Oh, I got to go to work so I can feed my kids. I got to go to work so I can buy this, buy whatever my family needs or what we'd like to have. But that work is actually doing something for other people. When we go out and put in gas lines, oh yeah, we just go put in gas line. No, that's so people would have gas. They cook, they heat, see? So we need to keep that in mind and do it for ourselves and for other people. See, in Proverbs 3:9, says, honor the eternal with your possessions. We acquire possessions, but God says, honor God with those possessions. We can't serve God and mammon as equals, and even moving mammon above God in many cases, and with the first fruits of all your increase. The first things go to God. The first things go to God. And just in other words, we can't serve God and mammon in that sense of saying, well, we got God and mammon. Okay, they're just kind of equals here, and we might move mammon ahead a little bit. No. It says, honor God with your substance. We have to have some possessions or something to honor God. And if we don't have the physical possessions, whatever I said there, I meant things you have, then we do it through prayer and supplication to God. And He looks at that, and hey, that's great. It's maybe, I don't know for sure, maybe it's greater than acquiring the wealth and the possessions. But honor the eternal with your substance. And when you do that, and you understand that, I think you can do it with your might. You can put your heart into it. You know, you don't let your job be your master in the sense that you sacrifice everything for your job. Very early when we first came in, we had the little children, and I didn't know very much about the Bible, probably almost zero. But I did read, God told Israel to not sacrifice their children to him as the Canaanites did. And you say, well, they burned their children. Well, God, there's a lot of ways you can burn your children, emotionally, physically, mentally. And I told my wife, God does not expect us to sacrifice our children. No. He expects us to bring them up in the nurture of God. But if we have to neglect them and destroy them mentally, physically, then he doesn't require that. No. It says, honor the eternal with your substance. And our own children, we honor God. We bring them up to, in an honor to God. And, of course, if we're neglecting them, say, well, I don't have time. I got to go over here and serve the church or whatever. God doesn't require that. Of course, he does. We cannot put our children before God. No. Well, Johnny, he doesn't want us to go to church. Instead, he wants us to go to his ball game or his play or whatever. No, that's something different. Then we're going the other way. But we can do something to compensate for that. Being I don't have any children anymore, I can talk about that. Yeah, when I had kids, I don't want to hear it, okay? Tell it to somebody else. But, you know, we can do it with your might. Let's see, I wanted to turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Ecclesiastes, we got Proverbs, then I think it's Ecclesiastes chapter 9. Ecclesiastes 9. Yes, Ecclesiastes chapter 9. And we see whatever your hand finds to do. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 7 through 10. Go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with merry heart. God expects us and wants us to have these things. For God has already accepted your works. Let your garments always be white. Yeah, you have clothes. And let your head lack no oil. That's kind of a luxury. So God's not expecting us to just drain ourselves and give everything away and live in poverty because of that. He says, live joyfully with the wife you love all the days of your vain life. See? Love your wife. Hopefully, we try to demonstrate this. This is maybe a worldly or a national day that we observe. But here's a principle. Live joyfully. Yeah, see life with the wife whom you love. See life. Spend time there. This is all part of living, not letting a job be our master in the sense that we don't even have time to show love and appreciation for the wife which you love in your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform. I was talking with some of the men before, and I was flying Cincinnati way up there, and it was clear. I'm looking down, and I mean, little tiny buses and cars and little tiny houses. I'm thinking there's people going in and out of there. And look how tiny that is, how insignificant when you look at it as as if you could look down as God does. He says, all your days of vanity, for this is your portion in life. And verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. In other words, if you have a job, do it with your might. Do it with your might, and then you go to your family. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. No, do it with your might. Because, let's look at Proverbs chapter 12. Here's one of the things, the result of that. Could be, of course, God knows what's best for us in the long run. And sometimes he has a reason for withholding certain blessings at certain times. But Proverbs 12, verse 24, the hand of the diligent, didn't it say, do it with your might? It says, the hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. Years and years ago, my wife went and made me these plaques on my wall. And this is some of them. She was trying to get a message to me. Work diligently, you know, lazy man, he's going, you know, they're hanging there before me every day. As you know, kind of like a pitchfork. You can couch, get up, go to work, okay? But I mean, that's biblical. You didn't know she was a biblical scholar. But she knew enough to know these certain principles. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. Hand of the diligent will make, and will be, but will be made rule. You've seen it, the diligent, as they say, if you want something done, find a busy person to do it. Let's look now in Isaiah 55, and we can begin to conclude. I feel like I kind of conclude the matter in Isaiah 55. And God wants people to just stop and think about these things. Isaiah 55, I'll just start in verse 2. It says in Isaiah 55, verse 2, why do you spend money? Or the word is weigh out silver, words your wealth. It says, why do you spend money for what is not bread? And your wages for what does not satisfy? Are we ever satisfied? What is the proverb or the Ecclesiastes, which is it? Is the eye ever full or the ear full? No. He says, why do you spend money for what is not bread and your wages for that that does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good and let your soul delight itself in abundance. And yeah, he's talking physically, but spiritually. Let your soul delight in abundance. And incline your ear and come to me, and here your soul shall live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you, the sure mercies of David. He's saying, if you put the mammon on the second shelf and me on the first, but you know, you're going to have abundance spiritually and physically. And in verse 6, seek the eternal while he may be found. Call upon him while he is near. And when he's may be found or when he is near, that's when he would make his presence, would reveal it to you. So when it says there in Genesis, is it 17? That the eternal appeared to Abraham under the tree. And then three men walk in. And Abraham used that time, didn't he? when God was near, making, pleading for his nephew Lot, who lived in Sodom. You know, will you take Sodom? If 50 are righteous,
yeah,
20, 30, 10. Words, God was near, actually physically, to him, and he used it. God says, seek him while he may be found. I think Abraham thought, hey, now's the time to make this move. I'm sure he'd been praying about it, but now is the time. Seek the eternal. Our work doesn't take priority over God. It just doesn't. It doesn't take that priority. And in verse 10, he says, for as the rain comes down and the snow from heaven, how many of us can have any control of that? You know? And do not return there, but water the earth and make it bring forth bud, that it may give seed to the sower. Well, seed to the sower, someone's sowing. Sowing the grain. Remember what Jesus said? You know, the sower went out and he spread the seed and some of it grew up and produced. Well, as a church, we do that. And as a person, we are a sower, physically and spiritually. We will be sowing because we're making the effort to plant, whether it's going to a job or whether it's farming. And then, two, we sow. We're a worker. We sow spiritually also. So God gives the rain and the seed to the sower. The sower is just throwing it out as God gives it. And bread to the eater. So the bread has to come from somewhere. So it's just saying, use what God has given you, whatever that is. God expects us to work. Then he will bless us. We're working spiritually and we're working physically. And if we're physically unable, then we work spiritually. Use what we've been given. What does it say in Proverbs 11:25? I will like to read that. Proverbs. Psalms. Proverbs. Proverbs 11, 25. See here. I'll start in verse 24. There is one who scatters, yet increases more. In other words, he's giving. He's scattering. The sower is scattering, but he's increasing more. And there's one who withholds more than is right, but he leads to poverty. We don't want to be that Scrooge, to withhold more than is right. It says withhold more than is right. Didn't say you have to withhold everything, but more than is right, more than you should be. Notice verse 25, the generous soul will be made rich. Again, we read that. And he who waters will be watered himself. Well, we could read Malachi 3:10, but you're probably well familiar with that. Bring the tithes in, and I'll open the blessing, but you won't be able to receive it. And I know some churches use that, the prosperity gospel, just give your tithe and give your money, and you're going to be rich. But again, this is a dual situation. And God is involved there in which way you will be blessed or in both ways. So we can't serve God and mammon. But we can serve God and our fellow man with our mammon, with our influence, and with God. So brethren, we serve God with our mammon, not God and mammon.